Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In this week's podcast, we're going to look at the 15 most Googled financial terms, and we're also going to look and see how Wall Street is compensated. But first, a message from our sponsors. Well, wait a second. Oh, we just got started a few months ago. I don't have a big enough audience. We don't have sponsors yet. I forgot about that. All right. So let's just jump right into the content then. What do you say? All right. So the first thing I want to talk about is the 15 most Googled financial terms. There was a recent study done by Liberty Bank. And what they did is just they looked at the top financial searches out there made on Google. As you know, you can always kind of dig in through Google and find out what people are searching for. You know, what's the top financial searches, what the top, you know, personal searches, blog searches, pretty much anything you're looking for. So anyway, when I saw this article initially, I thought, well, this will be maybe an article on, you know, how to buy stocks. Should I buy Apple stock? How should I invest my 401k? Do I have enough to retire? A lot of the things that I typically see as a financial planner. But what I saw was a nation that has a lot of financial issues. And I got to be honest, I was close to tears when I read it. Now, I'll start off saying that there were a few items on the top 15 that made me optimistic. There were a lot of questions on what's a 401k plan? How do I use my 401k plan? There are also a lot of questions on or searches on compounding interest, which could be a good thing or a bad thing depending if you're saving money or if you're going into debt. So if you're saving money, you're using compound interest in your benefit. If you're going into debt, it's just the opposite. There was also a search on what's a credit union, and that's great. I love credit unions. In fact, I'm on the board of a local credit union. I tell clients all the time, you need to find a local credit union that you like instead of the banks. That's definitely going to be a future episode, just talking about why you should look at credit unions. But for now, let's just know that it's a good thing that people are actually looking into that. So again, there's some good things on here, on this top 15, but you know, most of them are pretty negative. The number one item that was most searched was regarding student loans. I get it. There's over $1 trillion of student loans. It's an enormous factor, especially for the millennials. You got to make sure you're not taking on too much debt. You want to make sure that you're not overpaying on the interest rate. You want to see if you can defer the interest on the loans. I get it. That should be a top financial issue in today's world. But I saw a lot of other items on there that really, you know, I was scared when I saw it. Using a line of equity. Questions or searches on auto loans. Payday loans was another big one. And if you're not sure what a payday loan is, basically, you don't have enough money to wait till your next paycheck to pay bills. So you have to get a loan up front on your next paycheck because you don't have enough money now. And the thing is, the people that do these are going to be paying 50, 60, 70% for that payday loan. It's ridiculous. There were also a lot of search items based on credit card debt. Again, not a good thing. Not a good thing if you're spending time having to look up credit card debt. So as I look at all these things, I started to think that most of the questions that Americans have is actually just dealing with bad things like debt. We're not a nation that's saving. We're not a nation that's building their wealth. We're a nation that's giving our wealth away. Now, I realize you're listening to this podcast, so you're probably somebody who takes good care of your finances. You're looking to get better with your finances. But it's kind of a sad state when we're looking at a nation that's really spending most of their time researching payday loans, lines of credit, and all the other kinds of debt instruments. Remember, debt is nothing more than pulling future consumption into the present. You got to pay for this at some point. So all debt's doing is it's pushing it out to the future plus interest. Now, sometimes you have to go into debt. If you're trying to buy a new house, not many people can cough up $300,000-$400,000. You know, I could see that. But if you're doing it to buy a big screen TV or a vacation, something along those lines, that's a problem. Again, it's probably not applicable to you because you're out at financial blogs and listen to financial podcasts. You're kind of a nerd like I am. But it's something that if you're stuck with credit card debt or if you have lots of student loans, you need to address these issues. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post a link to that survey in the show notes so you can kind of see for yourself what's really going on. But I got to tell you, I was kind of disappointed when I saw it. You know, I'm hoping people will start to focus on building their wealth, not deteriorating their wealth. That's what the whole purpose of this podcast is. So I know this is a little bit of a rant, but I just wanted to get that out there because I saw it and thought it was pretty interesting. Now, the next thing I want to discuss is just how Wall Street is paid. I'm always amazed when I ask a client what they're paying their advisor, and they have no clue. Or they say they aren't paying their advisor anything. Their advisor works for free. And Wall Street tries to do their best to cover up their compensation because they know if you find out what they're really making for selling you that product, you're going to be shocked and they're probably going to lose a client. So I wanted to give you just a quick overview of the three major ways that Wall Street makes their money. Now, there's numerous ways that they make money, but these are the three most common. And I'm mostly talking right now, at least for a couple of them, the really big brokerages. You know, we're talking the big, you know, the common names you've probably heard. They've been around forever. And the way you could tell is, do they have an investment banking arm? And that's the first way that these big brokerages get paid. It's their investment banking arm. So what's investment banking? Well, let's say Walt Disney wants to build a theme park in China. So they're going to have some money to do this. Now, I have no idea how much they would need. I have no idea what those annoying rides like It's a Small World would cost. But let's just say they need $1 billion. Maybe that's a little much. Maybe it's not. So in order to raise this money, they've got to get it from somewhere. They can either issue debt, which means that they're doing bonds, or they can issue stock or equity. So what they do is they go to these investment banking arms and have them raise the money for them. So the investment banks are always kind of raising money for companies or taking companies public. In some fashion, they are bringing money to the companies. So, I mean, that's good, right? I mean, companies need to be able to raise capital. So investment banks tend to do that. Now, what people don't realize is these investment banks get a cut of however much they raise. So the more money they raise, the bigger their cut. So let's bring it back down to you. Let's say you're going to visit your financial advisor, your broker, whatever they're calling themselves. You're sitting in front of that person, and the investment bank needs to sell or push Disney stocks or bonds to raise this money. Well, guess what's probably going to be recommended to you? Disney stocks or bonds. Now, it's not to say that Disney wouldn't be a good investment. It could be a fantastic investment. It has been a good investment for years. But there's a certain conflict of interest here that's not being disclosed to you. And the thing is, there's probably a high likelihood that that advisor sitting in front of you is going to get an extra commission, an extra little cut, if they can get that Disney stock or bond in your portfolio. So your advisor is going to give you 1,000 different reasons why Disney, you know, is poised to do so well. Hey, they're building a theme park in China. And again, it very well could be, but you're getting conflicted advice and you're probably paying a lot more for that because of that extra commission that broker's getting. So the first way that they get paid is through investment banking. The second way they get paid is very similar to what happens in the grocery store. Now, when you walk down the cereal aisle at your local grocery store, the companies that are at eye level, we're talking Kellogg's, Post, the ones that are at eye level pay a premium to be there. They want you to look and easily see their product. All the generic or lower cost cereals are either all the way at the bottom or all the way at the top. Right? They're not paying extra. You know, the generic or the low cost stuff, they're not going to pay extra to be right at eye level. They can't afford it. So they're going to be way at the top or way at the bottom. So this goes on in the financial world as well. Anytime you buy a mutual fund or an annuity or even an insurance product, it works exactly the same way. The companies that offer higher commissions or bonuses are the ones that are probably going to be put right into your account. So let's say there's a mutual fund company that wants to raise $100 million for their new small cap value fund. So what do? Well, they're probably going to offer an extra 1% or 2% or have some sort of contest for the advisor in order for them to sell the fund. So here we go back, bring it back to you again. You're sitting in front of your broker. He's talking about why you should be invested in small cap value. Yeah, maybe you need exposure to small caps, higher growth potential, and you want to do value because, you know, it's better price than growth, blah, blah, blah. He'll give you a good pitch without a doubt. But what he's not telling you is he's getting a little extra commission to sell you that small cap value fund versus one that maybe isn't offering that incentive or extra commission. So here again, it may be a great product. It may end up being a fantastic investment for you. But there's certainly conflict here, and it's something that's not being disclosed to you. So that's the second way they do it. All the annuity companies, all the mutual fund companies, all the insurance companies, they pay for shelf space. The third way that they make most of their money, and this is the most nefarious way, is through something called principal trades. So just like you and me, all these big brokerages have their own portfolio. They own stocks and bonds and other financial instruments. Now let's say they own some Disney stock, and they think Disney stock is way overvalued and due for a correction. Well, they don't just go out onto the open exchange, out to the market, and throw in a sell order. Because if they did that, considering how large their position would be, it would drop the price of Disney. They'd lose money. So what do? Well, they here again, they offer the advisors a little extra incentive, a little extra commission to put that stock into your portfolio. So basically, they're going to take their Disney stock and move it from their portfolio into their clients, even though they think that Disney's due for a fall. And this came out especially when MCI WorldCom and Enron, all of those companies fell apart in early 2000. What the SEC ended up finding was many of these big brokerages were putting all of the Enron stock and bond and MCI WorldCom stock and bond from their portfolio into their clients' portfolio literally days before those companies went bankrupt. So that is the worst way that they get paid or make money, but it is the way they do it. And again, you're sitting in front of your advisor and he's telling you why Disney stock's so great. You don't know that they're dumping their shares. They just make a good pitch of what a great company Disney is and how strong the mouse is. So I just wanted to give you kind of a real brief overview of how they get paid. You know, we call this podcast Saving Yourself from Wall Street. In order to do so, you really need to understand how conflicted Wall Street is. And in a future episode, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay out exactly how much these advisors make in commissions on the various products that they put in your portfolio. And then you can really freak out when you hear it. You're going to be amazed at how much these people make for very little work. You'll really start to understand why you need to save yourself from Wall Street. But for now, I thank you for listening, and please drop me a line with some comments or questions. I'd love to hear from you. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.